In Genesis, the story of Adam and Eve, which is in chapter 3, differs somewhat from chapter 2. In chapter 2, God creates humans en masse. Male and female, he creates them in his own image. And then in chapter 3, we hear of two specific people, Adam and Eve, and the fall. And of course, it's a story. But story, of course, is more powerful than fact. It illustrates something deeper. It's the biblical authors and editors' attempt to explain this strange situation we humans find ourselves in. That we're created in God's image, that we are created in love, and that love is what, it's our nature, it's what we are all about. And yet, we find ourselves steeped in sin, unloved. Enmity between ourselves and God and between ourselves and others. How is it possible that we could be created in God's image for love and yet so often we don't love? And it seems that this sin upon sin, generation upon generation, century after century, eon upon eon, it just gets so overpowering that there's no hope. But St. Paul in that second reading reminds us that despite the hopelessness of our world, God is always there. God has never left us alone. Even in Genesis, we see after Adam and Eve leave the garden, God is holding out hope for them. Don't give up on yourselves. Don't give up on creation, because I'm always with you. And then we hear through Genesis the story of Abraham. And then in Exodus we hear the story of Moses, that God is always sending people to bring some breath of life and hope into that hopeless situation. God does not give up on us despite our sin. And so through Moses, he actively rescues them from the oppression. This oppression that is a human invention. Of course, God never invented oppression. God never invented injustice. God never invented prejudice. One group lording it over another, that's just not part of God's plan. This is human sin. And God enters into that human sinful situation and rescues the people and then marries them. Joins himself to them in a covenant. I will be your God and you will be my people. But sin still prevails. And even Israel, God's experiment of justice in a worldly situation, often failed. And the prophets berate them for their failure to live up to the covenant. And then God sends Jesus, his son. And he rescues us from that darkness, from our sin, from our hopelessness. He enters into this human situation divine, divinely human, and shows us what it looks like to be God and act like God and love like God in a human body. And it looks like the cross. It looks like that self-sacrificing love that has always been in the triune life of God. It's a hope that is not Pollyanna. It's a hope that's not denying the suffering of the world. It's not denying the suffering, the persecution that we will go through if we proclaim the gospel. And so we see Adam as a type for Christ, and the type is always less than the fullness in Christ. Adam is that human created in God's image, and filled with God's Spirit, but he rejects that Spirit, and the Spirit leaves him. Jesus is filled with God's Spirit, so filled that he can send that Spirit as his own at Pentecost into us, so that we are filled with that Spirit, so that our lives are filled with hope, despite the evidence to the contrary. And then we see in that first reading, Jeremiah as a type for Christ. And we see so many things in that reading today that remind us of the journey of Jesus. His friends are looking for every misstep. The scribes and the Pharisees and the chief priests are always looking to trip him up. They try Jeremiah unjustly. They try Jesus unjustly. Jeremiah is a type for Christ. But just like Adam, the type is always less than the real one. What's less than Jesus about Jeremiah? He wants to see the vengeance that God takes on them. And we understand it in our humanness. We understand why he would say that. I've been persecuted by these people. I would like to see my vindication. I'd like to see them punished. And we've all been persecuted by somebody. We've all been unjustly treated. We've all been abused in some way or another. And there's something in the darkness of our hearts that wants retribution. And we think of justice as retribution. But Jesus, not the type, but the fullness, he isn't seeking retribution. As he hangs upon the cross, he says, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." He doesn't want to see the Romans punished for what they did. He doesn't want to see the chief priests punished. He doesn't want to see Judas punished for betraying him or Peter for denying him. It's just pure love. And we hear these gospel messages over and over again to remind us that that's our destiny too, to be pure love, to not seek vengeance, not only physically, but even in our hearts and even in our minds, to not seek vengeance, but to forgive as Jesus has forgiven us, to recognize our own sinfulness, our own guilt that has been freely redeemed. And then we're invited to proclaim that redemption to the world, despite the fact that from time to time it's going to bring persecution, it's going to bring ridicule, it's going to bring rejection. But we live in that hope that in the long picture of things, God's will, God's love, redemption will win out.